This radio program comes to you thanks to millions of men in uniform, Americans fighting overseas. The Treasury Salute. This is a program of the United States Treasury, your Treasury, reminding you for the fifth time in this war, you save and serve when you buy war bonds. And you salute with us a hero of this war, Captain Maurice Brick, winner of the Medal of Honor. Now, the Treasury Salute, starring Stotz Cotsworth with David Brookman and the Treasury Orchestra. Mr. Cotsworth.
Thank you. I'm going to be privileged in the next few minutes to bring you quite a story. Believe me, it's one for the books. The principal ingredient of this story weighs 230 pounds, stands 6 feet, 3.5 inches tall, and is called Maurice Britt. Heard his name? It's spelled with a purple heart, two oak leaf clusters, a silver star, a medal of honor. You should know just a little about Maurice Britt. They called him Footsie on account of his size 12 double E feet. Feet that they had to make special shoes for when he was captain of his high school football team. And when he was all-conference end for 3 years on the University of Arkansas football team. And when he played professional ball for the Detroit Lions. He only had time for 1 year of pro ball. He went on duty with his infantry regiment on the 5th of December, 1941, right after the end of the season. Can you imagine the phone conversation he might have had with his wife 2 days later?
That'll be 55 cents, please.
Coming up. Count it. Hello?
Maurice?
Hello, Nancy.
Oh, Maurice, honey.
Hey, how do you like the news?
Going away.
Quick action, huh? I'm in the Army 2 days. I got a job to do.
You sound happy. You sound like you arranged it all personally.
Hey, now don't start arguing. I stood in line for this phone for 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Darling, have they ordered you anywhere yet? I mean, are they going to send you out to Hawaii or anything?
I'm being measured for a grass skirt in the morning.
Oh, Maurice.
Hang on, honey. Don't worry. I got a hunch we're going to win this war. I was talking to the general. He gave me his personal promise.
Oh, fine.
I just bought an overseas cap, Nancy. I'll send you a postcard from Japan.
But Maurice Britt's regiment didn't go west. It went east. It went to Africa and then to Sicily and then to Italy. He was a first lieutenant by then and knew what it sounded like to have a bullet ricochet past his ear. Ever hear of a town called Acerno? Not a very big town. Just a village by our standards. That's where Maurice Britt first looked into a machine gun. German shooting. Good guns they have. Shooting from about 100 yards away.
Hey, soldier.
Huh?
That's a nice little instrument you got there.
Oh, yeah.
They tell me that thing will toss a grenade 40 yards.
Yeah, if you know how to handle it.
Gimme.
This is how you win a Silver Star. You grab a rifle with grenade launcher attached, and you crawl 50 or 60 yards through heavy machine gun fire to an exposed position. Then you crouch there, sliding your feet back until you're on your belly. Then you aim your rifle at a Nazi machine gun position, fixing the grenade on carefully, keeping your elbows down. It's easy. Sure. You knock out the enemy gun crew, kill two of them. Silver Star. Just like that. Then, you're a company commander. You know every name and every bearded face of 200 men. You lead your men up to the top of an ugly little hill of stone called Mount Rotundo. You all lie there, hugging the ground, thinking of lush green hills back home, hills of Arkansas and Massachusetts, thinking of popular songs, maybe, thinking of the picture of a girl in your wallet, thinking, what do those guys up north there mean by throwing bullets at me? What have they got against me? The Nazis attack on your left flank. Full company. More men than you number. They capture a machine gun section and four riflemen in advance, using their prisoners as a shield. Your hands are tied, so you get sore. You stand up.
I'll give our guys a yell. Fire when you get the chance.
Okay, Lieutenant. Hey, you guys! Duck and scatter!
Those prisoners the Germans had, those American kids, they duck their heads down and run for cover. They all live, which is more than the Nazis do. And then, if you're footsie Brit, you look around and you see a corporal, Eric Gibson of Chicago, and a private, Hunter Schleimer of New York City, and you say,
you guys got Garands?
Yes, sir. Right here, Lieutenant.
Let's see what those guys are made of the other side of all this underbrush, okay?
Lead the way, Lieutenant.
Have you ever seen a picture of a guy throwing a hand grenade? It's not like throwing a baseball. No, not by a long shot. You throw it stiff-armed, or you throw your arm out. Matter of fact, unless you're pretty rugged, you're likely to throw your arm out anyway. Britt tossed 30 of these heavy 4-pound hand grenades in the next 2.5 hours. He also emptied a Garand automatic 6 times. Corporal Gibson speaks.
After the battle was over, we counted 14 German dead. A lot of them, Lieutenant Britt killed himself, going into the woods alone with his M1 rifle and hand grenade. Throughout the entire morning, the Germans and Lieutenant Britt were exchanging fire at ranges as close as 15 yards.
Get that? The Germans and Lieutenant Britt were exchanging fire, not the Germans and the Americans. The Germans and Lieutenant Britt. Corporal Gibson continues.
Lieutenant Britt was all over the draw in the woods that morning. He was a one-man army. His actions and bravery undoubtedly had much to do with routing the Germans' counterattack. Had he failed, the company would have been isolated on Mount Rotundo. After noon, with the reinforcements that arrived, he went into the woods to get the rest of the Germans. As usual, Lieutenant Britt was right out in front. I didn't get more than a glimpse of him now and then after we started into the woods. The brush was too heavy. But every now and then I did see him. He was still out in the lead.
And they held their position, and they consolidated it. And then a lieutenant colonel commanding the battalion ran into Maurice Britt.
Lieutenant.
Yes, sir, Colonel Dolman.
What are you doing up front here? You're wounded.
Not tough, sir. A very mild deal.
Cut it out. You're too good a soldier to pull that stuff on me. Well, I can see your blood in 4 places. You're down to battalion aid station. That's an order.
That was an order. So there was Lieutenant Britt, standing just inside the medical tent, reporting to the commanding medical officer, Captain Roy Hanford of Sandpoint, Idaho, saying,
go ahead and finish with your other patients. I got a little scratch here I'd like you to look at when you got time.
Not being noble. Why be noble when you're in the front lines? You say something and you mean it. It's that simple. And so, eventually, Captain Hanford got around to looking at Maurice Britt.
Well?
That one there is more than a scratch, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
Got his emergency medical tag, Robert?
Yes, sir.
Elliptical avulsion down to the muscles. 1 inch long, 1/2 inch wide on left side. Danger of infection.
What's that elliptical avulsion?
Just what it looks like, Lieutenant. Your side's all torn apart.
Oh.
Treatment, evacuation to rear, to base hospital.
Hey, wait a minute, Captain. I'm a big boy now. I don't need that.
What do you mean?
I'm going to no hospital. I got a date back up on that hill with my guys.
I'd like to let Captain Hanford, the medical officer, pick it up from here.
Lieutenant Britt's behavior was, I believe, an inspiration both to the other casualties and to the tired medical personnel. There were several remarks and casualties from his company after he'd left.
I'd give anything to be a guy like that.
Guy like you? Stiff breeze would blow you over. You gotta be a man to be a one-man gang like that guy.
Lieutenant Britt didn't show me that piece of hand grenade embedded in one of his chest muscles until after we were relieved, several days later.
Let me tell you just one more thing about Maurice Britt. He and 2 other officers went on a scouting and reconnaissance party in a forward area. They were all three of them stationed in a building, observing half a dozen Nazi tanks.
They're coming this way. Phone back. Phone back, Bobby.
Six Nazi tanks looking at us. Got it? Six Nazi tanks. 500 yards. Coming up.
Hey, you out of your mind, Bobby? That's no 500 yards.
Well, you're such a judge of distance. How much do you make it?
You know, I can only figure distance by figuring how many football fields it is. From us to those tanks, it's not more than 3 football fields.
Hey, whatever the distance, they got our range.
Give me that phone.
They took Lieutenant... Excuse me, by this time he was a captain. They took Captain Britt to a base hospital right after they'd chased those German tanks away from there. In the base hospital, Captain Britt grinned a good grin as he looked at the Red Cross worker.
Feel better, Captain?
I feel okay. Oh, I'd like to take you up on that offer.
Which one was that?
Well, didn't you say that you'd take a letter for me if I dictated it?
At your service.
Well, it's to my wife. Her name is Nancy Britt. Her address is 2100 North B Street.
Captain Britt lay in his hospital bed, 3 toes broken and in a cast, his side lacerated, hand grenade wounds on his face and hands, a rifle ball through his side, scars from his Sicilian wounds, and his right arm missing. He dictated a letter to his wife.
The Nazis finally got lucky and laid me up. However, the only permanent injury will be the loss of my old pitching arm. But I still have my left arm to give you plenty of big hugs. And I will soon, Nancy. I will soon.
It's a long, long way from a football field to an Italian battlefront. But it's a journey thousands of brave men like Maurice Britt have made, and made with a grin on their faces and courage in their hearts. They've given all they've got. What are we giving, safe and sound, back home? Well, we haven't given enough unless we've put every dollar we can dig up into the fifth war loan drive. The zero hour is here, now. We can't and won't let our boys down. They're facing the bloodiest battles of all. They're helping to decide the history of the world. To back them up with our fighting dollars is the very least we can do. Your country asks you to buy twice the war bonds you bought in the last drive. If it means a sacrifice, remember, this is all-out war, and our boys are fighting it for us. Don't fail them. Back the attack. Buy double the war bonds you bought before. The United States Treasury thanks Dots Cotsworth and the other distinguished artists who appeared on this specially transcribed program. The Treasury Salute was written by Peter Lyon and directed by Paul Stewart. The music was conducted by David Brookman. This is Ben Grauer speaking.